Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Monday, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades because they've been able to find exactly the right insurance, and they've been able to find the best price for their customers. Whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be, they're the insurance experts. And if you need your insurance, if there's a claim, they jump in as if it happened to them. They are your partners in what's going on with your insurance. And if there's any updates needed, they make sure that you're updated. You know exactly what you need to be updated on. They take care of it. And if they find you a better price along the way, they'll pass that along to you right away as well. It's all Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On a weekend where we saw upsets in college basketball, we saw Penn State advance to the quarterfinals of the NIT. It was a magical weekend for Penn State wrestling, winning their 7th national title in the last 8 years. You'll hear this again during our play-by-play call of the day, but here's Jeff Byers on the Penn State Sports Network with the dramatic clincher in Cleveland.
Very intense right now. And now Martin is in on a beautiful shot. He gets into the legs. He takes Nickel to his back. And Nickel now rolling through. He takes Martin to his back. And Martin now in trouble. Nickel tightening up. Bo Nickel pins him. Bo Nickel wins the national title. How do you do, Bo Nickel? The Nittany Lions win the national title here in Cleveland. Bo Nickel does it.
Jeff Byers with the call on the Penn State Sports Network as Bo Nickel clinched the national championship not only for himself but for his team with a dramatic reversal in the early moments against Martin on Saturday night. Penn State crowning champions, four of them, Vincenzo Joseph, Isaiah Martinez. You waited 364 days to score 1 point? Really? Vincenzo Joseph wins his second straight national title. Jason Nolf wins the national title. Three straight for Zane Rutherford, joining Kerry McCoy as Ed Ruth as three-time national titleist at Penn State. Bo Nickel, of course, winning. Mark Hall finished second. And Penn State wins its 7th national title in the last 8 years, 8th overall to go with the 1953 team. A special, magical weekend in Cleveland for Penn State wrestling. They are the best in the business. A lot going on today. Football press conference today with James Franklin. The spring football getting underway today. Getting underway, in fact, in about an hour and a half, spring football will begin. Blue-white game April 21st in Beaver Stadium. Pro day is tomorrow. We're going to talk a lot about that. Saquon Barkley is not running a 40 tomorrow. He is going to run pass patterns tomorrow. That's what he's going to do. But it's also an important day for a guy like Christian Campbell, who did not run at the combine in Indianapolis. I think for a guy like Brendan Mann, chance to show what he can do. So we're going to talk with Phil Savage, Kim Jones. Kim will be here tomorrow. Neil Coulong. And we're going to talk a little golf with Jessica Marksberry in a moment. Rory McIlroy won the Bay Hill yesterday. Tiger Woods made a run. Tiger is now single digits to one to win the Masters. He is now the favorite. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And the Sunbury Motors studio will continue with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. 17.3 million entries in the ESPN Tournament Challenge. Zero have the Sweet 16. 17.3 million brackets entered. Zero have the Sweet 16 combination. I think there are three that have 15 of the 16. Amazing. We'll talk about the tournament in just a little bit. Golf, of course, the Masters coming up in a couple of weeks. Tiger Woods is playing well. Rory McIlroy won yesterday. During the Bay Hill tournament last week, I had a chance to talk with Jessica Marksberry from Golf Magazine, and we welcome Jessica back to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It is truly my pleasure.
Well, I was talking when I was out at the Fiesta Bowl. Bill Rosinski did the game on Westwood One, and he came over into our booth before the game, and the first thing Jack Ham and I said to him was, "Hey, Bill Rosinski, we love you on the Golf Channel." And he just starts laughing. Well, he then brought up the topic of Tiger Woods. He says, you know, Tiger's going to be playing at a tournament I'm doing in a couple of weeks. It's always a zoo. Well, Jessica, he's not only back, but, like, I mean, he's battling for the lead in the opening round today. At the Arnold Palmer. You're around this all the time. It seems like the people you talk to, and you get a chance to interview everybody, they seem genuinely happy for him. Would that be right?
It's beyond our wildest dreams, isn't it? Like, just from a media, golf media perspective, it's pretty much the most exciting thing that's happened to us. And I don't even know how long, since 2008, I don't know, 2009 maybe, with all the coverage of the scandal. But yes, just as you said, it's equally exciting to see how on board all of the other athletes in different sports and just his peers, other golfers, LPGA Tour players, everyone is totally all in on this comeback.
Well, it seems like it's been a throwback month. Michelle Wee won, Phil Mickelson won, and Tiger Woods is very close to winning. I mean, this, I feel like you and I have gone back in time.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? It's interesting as we head into the Masters, you know, the hype is always huge when it comes to the Masters, but now that we have these legends of the game, I mean, guys like Phil and Tiger in their 40s, you know, making, and Tiger's clubhead speed and his distance off the tee, making these young kids, you know, leaving them in the dust. It's incredible.
His clubhead speed was 129 last week. 129.
That puts me to shame. I mean, I won't even let mine is, but it's not even fair. Maybe I need a fusion surgery too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let me put it this way. When I swing, right, they play the theme of Chariots of Fire. So, I mean, it's not. So, it's not 129.
I'm with you.
It's not 129, I can tell you that. But it's just interesting. But it's also interesting as to how the fans have reacted to it. Because I remember covering the U.S. Open at Marion when he played. And I remember walking away. And he was okay at that. It was no big deal. But I remember he had huge galleries, and some of them were absolute Tiger fans. Others were curious because it was Tiger Woods, and then, of course, there's a certain faction rooting against him. And then you go over to where Mickelson was playing. Now, Mickelson was in the thick of the tournament with Justin Rose, and his fans love him. Maybe not to the same volume as Tiger does, but now it looks like Tiger Woods, the gallery loves him.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it ties back to the fact that Americans especially, we just love a winner, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, we love you, Tiger. We're happy to see you back. But if Tiger is winning again, okay, well, everybody wants to get on that bandwagon and get behind him at that point. So, you know, it was one thing to, I think, have him back and competing. And in a way, I think it's a little, maybe just, it's disappointing and even a little bit distressing for Tiger fans when they see him playing poorly. Because it's just not how they like to remember one of their favorite stars. So to see him back competing again with the intense look in his eye, the big-time fist pumps, the galleries are just eating it up. And given his performance at the Valspar, and now that momentum seems to have carried over this week already, everyone, I think, is waiting for a collective freakout when he actually does win his next PGA Tour event, because it's got to happen, right? I mean, it's got to happen, given what we've seen.
Because now what he's done, my question was whether he could string four rounds together. Well, he's doing that.
Gosh, what a huge step forward. A completely, I think, in so many ways unexpected for most of us who have been following him throughout the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And what a welcome surprise it is.
What does it tell us about his growth that he's now become the President's Cup captain after being, you know, he's been an alternate captain, assistant captain, vice captain, whatever, on Ryder Cups and so forth? What does that tell you about the fact that he'll now be the captain of the President's Cup team?
Well, my wonderful colleague, Michael Bamberger, just wrote a great column about that whole idea. And it's on golf.com right now, if you're interested. Everything Michael writes is wonderful, but this topic in particular is very interesting because, as he mentioned, Tiger has been a bit of a lone wolf throughout his whole career, other than, you know, the 2 years that he spent at Stanford. But he's been this kind of singular entity, keeps to himself, does his own thing. The intensity is always a 10 out of 10. And over the past couple of years, as we've seen his game diminish a little bit, certainly not at the current time, but, you know, where he was with the injuries and the continual comebacks, we've seen him open himself up a little bit more. He's been a bit more open with the media, letting people in. He's befriended younger guys on tour. He's taken that assistant captaincy role in Ryder Cups, and he's become one of, you could say, the elder statesmen in the game, and a bit of a mentor to some of these young guys. So it seems like a very natural progression for him, and now I think we're all just waiting with bated breath for the idea of Tiger being a playing captain, because right. I think that's the expectation on everyone's minds right now.
You've interviewed a lot of people in this game. Have you had an opportunity to talk with him? Because he's usually somebody that is very selective about who he ends up talking to.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, Tiger is one of those players that I have not yet had the opportunity to sit down with. Putting myself out there, would love to chat to you, Tiger, if you're listening. But yeah, it is, you know, he's extremely in demand, and it's a tough interview to get. But obviously, anyone in golf media would relish that opportunity,
right.
Myself included.
Right. Yeah, well, not everybody's Tom Rinaldi. All right, so that appears to be the outlet. How do you, you know, all of us love the Masters. How do you look at that, you know, and in the game, is this golf's Wimbledon? Is the Masters golf's Wimbledon?
Yeah. For me, it is.
Yeah,
I know, you know, my husband's
here.
From Ireland. Yeah, my husband's from Ireland, and he, when we've had this conversation many times, you know, if you could win one major, which one would it be? And so we'll go back and forth on the Open Championship versus the Masters. And it's kind of like, okay, well, the Open is, you know, it's the most competitive field, and it's worldwide, and you're the champion golfer of the year. Okay, yes. But when you win the Masters, you get to play for the rest of your life. You're an honorary member at Augusta National. You know, it's like you get to drive down Magnolia Lane whenever you want. It's just, I think there's something incredibly special about that place. The history, obviously, the fact that we go back there every single year, everyone knows every hole, can play it in their minds as they're watching the tournament. For me, it's all about the Masters. There's no doubt about that.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to speak for your husband here. In the Rota, which course would he like to win it on for the British Open?
Oh, geez. Can you do better than the old course? I really think that's the ultimate. And if you talk to some of the guys who have won multiple majors, I think they consider it a real feather in their cap when they have won the Open at St. Andrews. So, like, let's say you win the Masters and a British Open. Well, you certainly hope that it's going to be at the old course. That's pretty solid pair right there. The home of golf in Augusta National. It's not bad at all.
What's the next project you're working on?
Well, right now, we are, of course, prepping for the Masters.
Right.
So we have a video day in our New York City headquarters next week, where we're going to be filming a lot of preview content. So we're working on some preview pieces right now. And from the magazine's perspective, we're already looking ahead to the U.S. Open issue. So we've got a few things going on in that realm. And, of course, I think we're going to be incorporating some extra style content throughout the magazine over the coming months as well. So a couple irons in the fire, but always fun, lots of variety.
Right. And by the way, they'll be at Shinnecock this year. So talk about going to a classic course. It is going back to a classic course. I mean, that is an incredible place.
That's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to that. I've never played Shinnecock, but I worked at Maidstone for a couple years in college, which is just right down the road. And it's going to be a monster and very, very special. So I'm very excited about that.
Very special and lots of wind out there in Long Island.
No doubt. And heat and humidity, depending, you know, it's so interesting what can happen when they're in New York in June. I mean, could get perfect weather and it might just be, you know, 95 and gross. we'll have to see what happens.
Oh, my goodness. I remember, what was it, the year that Goosen won it. And with Mickelson, remember they were watering the greens and not watering the greens.
God.
I mean, that was a mess.
Oh, so it's so dry. I mean, it can get so – and then it could just be a washout. You think of, like, Bethpage, you know, over the years. And
yes.
The incredible amount of rain that they get. And, it's, you know, the luck of the draw. But generally in New York in the summertime, you're going to get rain at least once. Maybe not that far east.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
just so you know, it's right now Shinnecock's buried under snow. So.
I know, poor New York. Oh, what a brutal winter it's been with snow so far.
Incredible. Always a pleasure. We enjoy having you on. I love talking golf with you, and we appreciate the time you give us all the time.
Well, thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you right before the Masters.
That'll be great. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you. Take care.
Jessica Marksberry from Golf Magazine. All right. Wrestling winning the national title. Four individual titles. Zane Rutherford is third straight. Bo Nickel clinched it second straight. Jason Nall, second straight. Second straight for Vincenzo Joseph. Mark Hall comes up just short. Seven national titles in 8 years. Without question, the wrestling dynasty, second only to the dynasty put together by Iowa, but Penn State's creeping up on that. It is remarkable what they've done, how consistent they are, how good they are, and how entertaining they are. Penn State Wrestling has done more for wrestling than any program in the history of collegiate wrestling. Iowa may have won, but not as entertaining as Penn State is. We got the NIT tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Al McGuire Center. Ron beginning at 6:30 tomorrow night. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Coming up next half hour, Kim Jones, NFL Network on the Combine, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention, Central Pennsylvania truck buyers. This is the sales event you've been waiting for. Sunbury Motors' annual March New Truck Sale. SMC is the only Ford dealer in the area that has four city blocks of new Fords and has sold over 40,000 new trucks. Sunbury Motors has over 320 new Fords to choose from. SMC has Motor Trend's Truck of the Year, the 2018 Ford F-150 starting at $25,969. SMC has 61, that's right, 61 2018 Ford Escapes, and they're priced from just $19,730. There's 25 2018 Ford Explorers starting under $30,000. And there's 45 2018 Ford Super Duty trucks from $38,584. Plus 0% financing for up to 72 months on select models. Central VA truck buyers, this is it. SMC's annual March New Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy serving this valley for decades. I don't care whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever the insurance need may be. They have an expert in that area and will take great care of you. They want to find out a lot about you. They want to find out what fits your finances. They want to find out exactly what you need to have covered and how much coverage you need to make sure that there's no issue. They're the experts in insurance. And if there's a claim, they will go to work for you as if it happened to them. They're your partners as well. The insurance professionals, Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Summer. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And don't forget, May 2nd, the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament taking place at the beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, then Kim Jones, NFL Network. 1938, the Toronto Maple Leafs scored 8 goals in 5 minutes. That's not good. 1956, the Minneapolis Lakers beat the St. Louis Hawks 135-75. In Game 2 of the Western Division Finals, it was the largest margin of victory in NBA playoff history. 1967, the Chicago Bulls won their 33rd game of the season. It was significant because that's the most games won by an NBA expansion team. 1981, the Buffalo Sabres set a record when they scored 9 goals in the second period of a game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Sabres won 14-4. Brett Hull became the St. Louis Blues became the third NHL player to score 80 goals in a season. 1991, NFL owners voted to take the 1993 Super Bowl away from the city of Phoenix because Arizona had not yet recognized Martin Luther King Jr. Day. 1995, Michael Jordan returned to the Chicago Bulls after nearly 2 years of retirement. He scored 19 points in the loss to the Indiana Pacers. The game televised on NBC was the most watched regular season game in NBA history with an estimated 35 million viewers. The Bulls did not win the title that year. The Houston Rockets did. All right. Tomorrow is pro day at Penn State. Saquon Barkley will not run the 40 tomorrow. He will not do all the agility stuff, and he's already been measured on that. And he has been smartly talked out of running a 40. There's no need to. But he will run pass patterns tomorrow. He will do that. He wants to show his pass-catching ability, his route-running ability. He will do that tomorrow. It's a big day for a guy like Christian Campbell tomorrow, who did not get a chance because of a slight tweak of the back. He could not do anything in Indianapolis. Also, for a guy like Brendan Mann tomorrow is an important day because Mann wasn't invited to the combine in Indy. Kim Jones, NFL Network, is going to be on hand returning to State College. Kim, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing very well. You're in an interesting spot because I think you're one of the few reporters out there outside of the State College area that really knows Saquon Barkley because you had a chance to really sit down and get to know him. So whatever team drafts him, personality-wise, beyond the obvious, what we see, physical traits, what kind of individual are they getting based on the person you got to know?
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, and it's one that James Franklin made to me a day or two before the combine when I spoke to him over the phone. He was excited. He said, I know he's going to kill it on the drills, and Saquon did, but he said, I'm excited for the NFL to get to know him. And he went on to describe him as a low-risk, high-reward player, which we often at the combine talk about. Well, he's a high-risk, but high-reward. Well, Saquon, in one respect, is the exact opposite, because anyone who knows him knows he's low-risk. This is a kid who's not going to get in trouble. In fact, a coach said to me at the combine, I'm more worried about me getting in trouble over a weekend than I am Saquon Barkley getting in trouble over a weekend. And that was after Saquon had interviewed with that team. So I think, you know, they now realize the humility, the football knowledge, the sort of perspective that Saquon brings that does help to set him apart. Although, make no mistake, I mean, he left an incredible impression just physically and during the drills at that combine as well.
Well, the physical gifts, because obviously you've been to practices as well at Penn State. So, in other words, you've seen, it's not just games, you've seen what he does in a practice as well. I mean, you look at great high-level athletes all the time. What are the elements that allow Saquon Barkley to have the opportunity to seamlessly go from college to the pros, even though you and I both know it's a chasm?
Well, I've asked coaches who know him best, and you know where they work, that question, and independently a couple of them have said to me his explosiveness. Just, and Steve, the way I think of that is the number of games I watched on television where he would get to the corner and I would say to myself, he's gone. And that was before he got through traffic, because I knew he could turn that corner and get downfield faster than any of the defenders, especially including the DBs trying to catch him. So I think, you know, on a physical level, it will be that explosiveness. I think when you look at Saquon, and I had this conversation with some NFL people last week, it's not till you see him in person, you know, that you see his legs and how big they are, the calves. I mean, a number of people mentioned his lower body to me in that respect, and that low center of gravity, which that was the one thing I noticed when I did watch practice last August. I did not realize he was built exactly that way, and that certainly helps him in any number of ways and helps to explain, you know, his ability to break tackles, his ability to get through traffic, probably, I'm almost certain, his ability to hurdle. I mean, there's a lot there when you look at him physically, and the NFL got to see all of it last week.
All right, so let's go to the next step out of this. There are also a couple of other Penn Staters that went through that combine that certainly impressed. So what were a couple of items in that area that did stick out to you?
Well, you know, do you know Dwight Gault? Do you know the strength and conditioning guy? And I know his title's grander than that, but that's what I call him.
Yeah.
Do you know him?
Oh, I know him very well. Very well.
Of the people not at the combine, he probably had the best day, and he had a better day than some people at the combine. Because, you know, my colleagues, Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock, and I had nothing to do with this, trust me, they wouldn't listen to me anyway, but they were raving about him and the Penn State players and the way they were testing and jumping and running and everything that goes into it. So certainly Penn State is doing something right there. That's a terrific, or was a terrific hire and remains one by James Franklin, and it was definitely noted. You know, Troy Apke had Deion, my buddy Deion Sanders, going nuts, and I loved it. It was absolutely hilarious when he ran what turned out to be officially a 4.35, which is ridiculous. So it might have been a 4.34, but it was a 3. I think it was a 4.35, but it was fast. Let's put it that way. So I just think that Gesicki wowed people. I had a team that picks, let's just say, toward the back end of the first round, and someone from that team said to me, we love him. I don't think we can get him now. And I said, in the first round, you don't think you can get him? And the person said, maybe not with that workout. So there were guys all over the place that opened eyes. Deshaun Hamilton, my colleague Steve Smith Sr., tweeted and or said on the air, and then I tweeted what he said, which was, he's the best route runner. You know, he runs great routes. I think we all knew that. But to have someone like Steve Smith, who's a very critical eye, trust me on that, because I'm in production meetings with him. But for him to say that, I thought was high praise, and it was great for Deshaun, who's obviously a great, great story and leaves Penn State with a great legacy there. So, really, you know, I was surprised we didn't see Marcus Allen run. He's going to I would think he's going to have to run at Pro Day. Christian Campbell didn't work. He said he'd be ready for Pro Day. So those are the guys, to me, that would have to do stuff at Pro Day. I mean, if I'm these other guys, if I'm Saquon, if I'm Apke with the 40, and if I'm Gesicki, I don't do a thing at Pro Day. I would just do interviews there, but that's me. And I just came from Alabama's Pro Day, where a lot of their big guys didn't do anything at Pro Day because they rested on their numbers at the combine. And to be honest with you, the Penn State kids had better numbers than the Alabama kids.
Right, that's amazing. Now, will you go to Penn State's Pro Day?
I will. Those are the two I'm going to go to. I like to go to one other one than Penn State's, and I don't think last year I went to Penn State's. I'm not sure if we covered it, to be honest. But I like to go to Penn State's, obviously, and always will. And I like to pick another one. Last year I went to Ohio State's, and this year I went to Alabama's.
All right. So it'll be interesting to see what you pick up from that. What did you pick up from Alabama? A lot of the guys will test well. Did Minkah Fitzpatrick do anything, or did he opt out?
Minkah did not. Calvin Ridley only did drills. Let me think. Rashawn Evans was going to run the 40, but they have a second pro day at Alabama at the end of the month, so he'll wait and do the 40 there. Deron Payne didn't do anything. I'm probably leaving someone out. But the DBs didn't do anything except for Tony Brown. So a lot of their guys rested on what they did in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, there are guys, for example, here at Penn State. Let's take Brendan Mann. He did not go to the combine. Well,
Pro Day is going to be really important for him.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what happens is that a guy like Saquon Barkley just being around will then draw people in to go to the Pro Day, even if he doesn't do anything, and they'll end up seeing a guy like Mann, and maybe Mann, to his credit, will test well.
No doubt. No doubt. Listen, I remember, was Zettel last year or the year before, Steve?
2 years ago. Yep.
Okay, so Zettel at Hackenberg's Pro Day, I remember watching him do drills, and he had not been at the Combine. And I remember watching and thinking, and the Lions ended up drafting him, and he's done well there. Did they draft him, or was he a free agent?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He was drafted by Detroit, and of course, the great story is that that's where he grew up.
Right. But he's been good for the Detroit Lions. They like him. So at least the former regime liked him, and I assume the current one will as well. So, yes, there are stories like that at Pro Days all the time, and, yes, that certainly could happen at Penn State.
All right. A standard question that you're going to be asked, look, you know, you see the best in quarterback play all the time. You're around the Patriots a lot this year.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact.
Yes, I was.
So you look at the kids coming through. There are a number of them out there, but the question is, what is the quality of them out there? So what's your gut feeling based on what you see, what you know, what you read?
Well, I'll do my gut feeling based on the decision makers, talent evaluators I talk to in Indy, because that's the way I'm more comfortable talking about them, just because I'm going to say something and someone's undoubtedly going to say, you never played football, what do you know? And I get it. I 100% get it. But here's what I took away. Josh Allen helped himself the most in Indy. Steve, he uncorked down the left sideline a 70-yard pass. It was absolutely gorgeous. You got the feeling that he wouldn't have had to try very hard to throw it 85 yards, not 70. And there was a buzz in the building. And that is a building that never buzzes. Very rarely are those people impressed. So there was that. But beyond that, Josh Allen, I think, missed very few throws. I was told Josh Rosen missed one. No, I was told Allen missed one, Josh Rosen missed a couple. The talent evaluators I talked to were not as in love with Baker as some of the other reports I saw. Now, part of that is we all talk to different people, and we don't know, and we shouldn't know if it's under the guise of anonymity, who we're all talking to. So I just might have talked to some people who aren't as in love with Baker's game. I will tell you, in the interview room, Baker came across as, you know, beyond confident, which now that's gonna rub teams a different way. A head coach who is more defensive minded told me, I love his fire. A head coach who also interviewed him said simply, over the top, cocky toward arrogant, and I got the very distinct impression that team would not be interested in Mayfield. So the combine's fascinating for those reasons, and then there's Sam Darnold, who didn't throw, which was disappointing, and he'll throw at Pro Day. But a couple people did kind of roll their eyes, or at least shrug their shoulders. I should say shrug their shoulders at the idea, you know, Darnold has this opportunity, why not throw?
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess, you know, quarterbacks, some of them do need to be on a pitch count in life. But, I mean, in the end, if he throws at his own Pro Day, now under his conditions, with his receivers, I've got all that. Is that still good enough? I mean, does it really in the end hurt him?
Well, it depends if you're talking to GMs or coaches. The GMs, for the most part, say, yeah, it's fine. We've seen him. We'll see him at his Pro Day. We get it. The coaches are the ones who say, this is our first shot at these guys. The coaches busy during the season aren't evaluating college players like the GMs in the front office and the scouting departments are. So for the coaches, I found them to be more disappointed because they're literally getting first looks at these quarterbacks, even though we all say, wow, we've all been talking about him for a while. The coaches have been busy coaching. So for the coaches, it was disappointing. But, you know, ultimately, if he throws well and they find a way to either understand or kind of dismiss his turnover issues, there will be a team that falls in love with Sam Darnold.
Right. And, you know, the one thing he does have, it's not quite to the Roethlisberger level. And, yeah, obviously it can't be. But he does have an ability to keep a play alive. Now, that doesn't mean it's always going to be positive, but he does keep plays alive.
Well, and you just hit on a reason that a couple people and I talked in Indy about why he may not have thrown. There aren't those designed rollout plays, really, where you're, you know, reacting in the moment. You know, I mean, you roll out a little bit at the combine, but you know what I mean. You're not actually reacting right to a defender. I do wonder at his Pro Day if they kind of manufacture some of that stuff, because he is pretty decent in those situations, and you could argue a little bit better in those situations. So I did have that conversation with people who allowed that might be part of why he didn't run the drills and throw the ball, right, because it maybe wasn't his optimum situation where he could really shine against a guy like Allen, who has an enormous arm, and a guy like Rosen, who is fairly accurate, and a guy like Baker, who has been accurate as well.
Right. Now, obviously, the general public's not going to be allowed in to watch Penn State's pro day. I mean, you and I will both be there.
They could sell tickets, though, man.
I know they probably could. How when somebody, Kim, watches on TV on NFL Network, which does just an incredible job. I mean, Bill Belichick, I think, was exactly right about what he said. How should people watch that and then interpret the information as to what it means? Because you've gone to it, you know it, you have a better understanding of it. So how should the average fan watch that, and what do you think they should think?
Well, you know, it really, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? You're seeing guys against air. You're not going to obviously line people up to be competitive. You certainly don't want to do anything that would in any way increase the likelihood of injury. You'd hate to see that at any off-season workout of any kind in any sport. So I think that you'd watch it to see speed. You'd watch it to see agility. You'd watch it to see footwork to some degree. And with, like, a Troy Apke, maybe you watch it and you're pleasantly surprised. Listen, I liked Apke not just because he's a Penn Stater, but watching the game, Steve, I thought, this kid can play. And he came up in some big situations with some big plays, and I liked him. I had no idea he was that fast. So you might also see a performance or two that makes you say, wow.
Right. Exactly right. Because you're right. I mean, it's interesting how the players get ready for combine or pro day, and they're completely different workouts than football workouts.
Completely different. Yeah. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr., I can't remember what he ran, but Evan Engram, who the Giants drafted as a tight end last year, ran faster at the combine. Odell was training, so his training was different. Leonard Fournette was compared to Saquon, you know, during one of our 40 simulcasts, and I love when they do that, the guys through the years against each other, in a video sense. And I think Fournette tweeted, you know, I was 240 pounds, you know, which isn't anyone else's fault, by the way, but he ran at a heavier weight last year. So, yeah, I mean, the training is definitely different. Hey, one thing about Saquon before I forget, because your audience will actually really appreciate this. I was talking to him a lot during the day, and I would have done that no matter what school he went to. I did it with Fournette last year, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was talking to him a lot during the day, so I talked to him when it was over, and I asked him about it, and he said, I really wanted to run a 4.3. And as we know, he ran a 4.40. Right. And he said, I've got to go back and work on my technique. And I looked at him and I said, Saquon, you never have to run another 40 in your life. And it's true. He never has to run another 40 in his life. But that's who he is, where he's thinking about getting better, when I cannot imagine anyone with any sense allowing him to run a 40 at the pro day.
Right. And see, that's where, if you watch the last play of the Iowa game, where Trace throws the touchdown pass.
Yep.
The area where Saquon improved more than any other area than when he was here was he became a really good blocker and blitz pickup. He wins the game because he picks up Josie Jewell, who's a good linebacker in the hole.
Totally agree. And I've brought that play up several times. I think it speaks to who he is. And with that, you know, epic piece I wrote about him, when I mentioned that play to him, and he destroyed Iowa, you know, during that game, as we know. Yep. But he said, that's the beauty of football. It's a team game. And he meant it. And that's who this kid is, Steve. I told you last time, and I was probably more eloquent then because I wasn't, my brain wasn't as fried, but if I was eloquent at all. But Saquon will immediately help the culture, whatever that culture is, in whatever locker room he joins. He will help in terms of work ethic. He spoke at the combine about how he wants to be a leader, even though he knows he'll only be a rookie this fall. I mean, this is a guy who talked at the combine about things we've heard him talk about, like leaving a legacy. He talked about wanting to run every route on the route tree. I asked Reggie Wayne what running backs do that, and he shook his head and said none. Now, right. I can't remember who else I asked. It might have been LaDainian Tomlinson. I can drop a lot of names, by the way, with my NFL Network colleagues, right? But it might have been LT. I asked the same question, and he said he thinks Alvin Kamara might be able to, but his list ended there. So you're talking about, like, every route on the route tree. Oh, okay, Saquon. Well, oh, by the way, almost no one does that. So that's who a team is getting, and I can't wait to see him one way or another this fall in the NFL.
Well, looking forward to seeing you on the 20th here, Kim. It's always a pleasure. Great information, and when your brain is fried, you're still better than 90%.
It's been a week, Steve. I tell you, Indy is so challenging, and I love it. And then to like, oh, by the way, stop in Tuscaloosa. It's just kind of like, okay, that's fine. And Mayock didn't go, so I ended up doing the stuff down there, which is fine. I enjoy that. So it's been quite a 2 weeks, but I love it.
Kim Jones, NFL Network. Coming up in the next half hour, Phil Savage, who runs the Senior Bowl, also color analyst for Alabama football, former general manager in the NFL as well. We'll talk to Phil about the Pro Day as well. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.